Good morning. I'm glad I can speak to you this morning while I'm on vacation. I'm at my mom's. She sends her greetings to all of her friends at Christ Church. I will be returning to work soon, and I hope all of you had a great 4th of July weekend. I'm grateful every day for the privileges we enjoy as American citizens. There is no other country in the world that affords its people the freedoms and opportunities that we have here. And as Christ followers, we know that with those great privileges comes really great responsibility. As Peter writes, we are to use our freedom to do good as God's servants. Now today we continue in our series, The Rule of Heaven, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. In the sermon, Jesus illustrates what life looks like when God's will, when the rule of heaven comes to earth. Clearly, living as Jesus describes here makes us radically different individuals and together a radically different kind of community. You know, some of Jesus' teachings here are very counterintuitive, and if Christ followers take them as seriously as I think Jesus intends, the church will be like no other human community on the face of the earth. And Jesus' sermon, you know, it isn't out there, so to speak, dealing with the ethereal things of life. No, Jesus' sermon is about the stuff our lives are made of: anger, sex, marriage, divorce, retaliation, religious practice, money, anxiety, and judging others. Talk about a relevant sermon. Jesus preached it. People certainly didn't leave thinking that the message had no application to their daily lives. Now, today's part of the sermon is a very famous teaching, and as I said, one that really hits home. It's a message that is relevant to every one of us. In today's passage, Jesus talks about money. As I said back in May, whenever we have to talk about money or sex, nobody else wants to do it. So even on vacation, I give the money talk. You know, one member back in May sent me this text message: "The only way to make your congregation happy to listen to a sermon on giving, remind us that it could have been about sex." So remember, we could be talking about sex right now, so really, count your blessings. In this famous passage, Jesus teaches us three things about money. One, money has the power to blind us. Two, money reveals what controls us. And three, money, how to break its power over us. We're going to start with the middle part of this passage where Jesus says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness?" You know, what is Jesus talking about? Well, let's see, no pun intended. Normally, you walk into a room and turn on the lights, right? So you can see where you're going. But if you walk into a dark room without any light, then even though you can normally see, you won't be able to see because there isn't any light. You're likely to stumble and fall. If, however, you walk into a well-lit room, but your eye is bad, if you're blind, then you're in darkness anyway. It doesn't matter if you turn on the lights, and you're likely to stumble and fall. You know, this obviously has something to do with money here, because it's the surrounding context in the passage. But what is it? What is Jesus teaching us about money? To put it simply, Jesus is teaching us that money has the power to blind us. You know, how so? There's really probably many ways that we could answer that question. But I want to start with this. Money blinds us to its influence in our lives. Think about it. You know, many sins, you know full well that you're committing them. Like if you're lying, or if you're committing adultery, or if you're murdering someone, you know, I could go on, you know. But it's interesting that Jesus talks more about sins related to money. And all sins related to money revolve around the selfish use of money. He talks about those kind of sins more than all the others put together. So it must be a significant sin. But I don't think I've ever heard anyone admit to being greedy. I've heard many different confessions, and I've made a lot of confessions myself, but nobody has ever come to me and said, Patrick, I'm really greedy. I never have enough. I always want more stuff. But Jesus clearly thinks we are greedy, or else he wouldn't always be talking about it. You know, I think greed is kind of like the proverbial frog in a kettle. The water just gets a little warmer over time so that you don't notice it. But just because you don't notice it, it doesn't mean it's not happening. When the water gets warm enough, it kills you. Think about all the stuff we buy, from toothbrushes to houses. We buy so many things, it would be really hard to do an inventory. Now think about what happens when your income grows. For all the many things that we buy, you know, there's always another product that is just a little bit better. That toothbrush is nicer, and you know what? It's only a few cents more. Those jeans are a little better than my old ones, and they are only a few dollars more. You know, that house is a little bit bigger, and it's only a few thousand dollars more. Each individual decision doesn't seem like a big deal, but when you put them all together, it means we're always living on the edge or over the edge of our income. There is never enough. And unlike times hundreds of years ago, you know, society today is very mobile. Years ago, your only friends were people like you, rich people or poor people or whatever, but you know, society was sharply divided by economic class, among other things. Now we move across societal lines much more easily. But the impact is that all of us now have friends who make substantially more money than we do. That means most of us are tempted to think that we're not rich because our friend so-and-so has so much more. You know, I guess Bill Gates thinks he's rich, but few people do. The truth is that most Americans, by any world standard of measure, are extremely rich. So we end up spending most of our money on ourselves. Stats show Americans on average give less than 4% to charitable causes. To think of that another way, we spend on average 96% of everything on ourselves. The giving percentage drops, interestingly, the more income rises. So, and poor people give a higher percentage of their income. Why don't we notice what's happening to us? Because money blinds us so that we're not aware of its powerful influence. Ask yourself, do you ever really contemplate how much you're spending? Do you ever think about, you know, am I spending too much on myself? Do you ever let anyone else ask you that question? You say, no way, that's private. Really? Is it? In the Christian community, we are supposed to love each other and to help spur one another on to Christ-likeness. How can we do that when we don't even let other people know us, when we want to remain private? We don't ask the question of ourselves, and we certainly don't let anyone else ask the question because we don't want to know. Why won't we look? Because our eyes are bad. We're blind to it. Money makes us not want to ask. Money makes us not want to look. We will buy things we don't need. We will pursue careers we don't like. And even worse, many people will do things that bring great harm to others and society as a whole. Why? Because money has blinded them to everything else. And if your eyes are dark, then how great is that darkness? Money has the power to blind us. Money also reveals what controls us. Jesus says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." He then continues in verse 24, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and money. Jesus here, he personifies money, assets, wealth, because he's setting it up as a rival god, a rival master, a rival lord. If you really want to know where your heart is, what controls you, who your real master is, follow the money. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. If you want to know where your heart is, where it rests, what you truly love, where you derive your sense of self-worth, then see where your money goes. And not where it goes begrudgingly, like for car repairs, but where it goes with joy, without effort. Now, for example, in 1997, I was one of the original subscribers to Tider Insider, my trusted source for Crimson Tide news. It cost $24 a year at that time. It's now up to $48 a year. I don't even think about the cost. I pay it with joy. It's a trivial example, but you get the idea. My heart is with the Crimson Tide. Anyone who knows me for more than a minute knows this, knows that I love Alabama football. And if you know me for 2 minutes, you'll know I love fishing and KU basketball as well. I mean, I'm a pretty simple guy. Now let's think about some other examples. Why, for some of you, does money just effortlessly fly out of your pocketbook for clothing and all the things that involve the way you look? Why does your appearance mean so much to you? Why are you so anxious about it? Why, for some of you, does money just fly out of your pocketbook for toys, computers, cars, phones, all the latest gadgets? What need of your heart are you trying to meet with all those things? Why, for some of you, does your money just fly toward your saving and investing accounts? You're proud of the fact that you're frugal and that you don't waste your money on things. You feel really good about the fact that you're thrifty and that you're able to accumulate large sums of savings. But the truth is, it's still all about you. Why? Where's your heart? Where's your real security? Your money is a way of trying to control your life. You think, now I have security, now I'm ready for whatever happens. You know, what's going on in all these things? Follow the money. We are using money to buy things that we believe will satisfy the deepest longings of our hearts. This is why Jesus sets money up as God's rival. Where are your love needs met? Where are your security and safety needs met? Where are your identity and significant needs met? Either in God or in the things you buy with your money. Follow the money because it reveals who our real gods are. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Tim Keller, he says, money is the chain that enslaves you to the real things that drive your life. Does money just fly out of your pocketbook to support Jesus' church that is called to worship him and to do his work in the world? Or does money fly out of your pocketbook to buy things for yourself or others? Follow the money. It will reveal what controls us. It will reveal where our hearts really are. And here's the point. The rule of heaven can't come into our hearts and into our worlds if we choose to serve money or the things that money will buy. Jesus makes it crystal clear. It must be one or the other. You cannot serve God and money. This is consistent with the message the Lord delivered through the prophet Isaiah. I am the Lord. That is my name. I will not yield my glory to another or my praise to idols. Jesus says we have a choice to make, and our answer cannot be both. Now that brings us to our final point, where Jesus teaches us how to break the power of money in our lives. Jesus tells us what we need to do. The question is, will we do it, or will we remain slaves? And his answer is not what you think I'm about to say. Jesus teaches, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. I'm sorry here, I digress. You're not supposed to admit these things if you're a pastor. But I must admit that I can't read those words without hearing them in John Turturro's voice from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Say the treasure,
the sweetness of I love you.
Do not seek the treasure. It's a bushwhack. You fix it an ambush. Do not seek the treasure. not seek the treasure.
Do not lay up for yourselves treasures. Okay, enough of the joking around. Jesus is really making a very serious point here about breaking the power of money in our lives. Essentially, he's saying we need to locate our treasure. And we've been talking about that. You do that by following the money. You know, what do you treasure? We have all these things we treasure. And Jesus helps us understand that this is why our lives are so fragile and messed up, precisely because we treasure the wrong things. Jesus explains to us that when we treasure earthly possessions, we will always be worried, insecure, and fragile because of the moths, rust, and thieves. Jesus is helping us to understand why we are always so stressed out and worried, anxious, and angry. It's because we treasured things that are fading away, things that are subject to decay, things that will always let us down. He wants us to see that, to see it and to acknowledge it. Then he tells us to relocate our treasure. Rather than laying up treasures on earth, Jesus tells us to lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. If you want to break the power of money in your life, then locate and then relocate your treasure. Relocate your treasure from earth to heaven. In other words, go get a source for your security and happiness that nothing and no one on earth can take away. Then you will be solidly secure and at peace. The question is, how do you do that? How do you get treasure in heaven? You know, Paul tells us in Colossians chapter 2 that in Christ are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. Jesus tells us that the kingdom of heaven is like a precious pearl that when you find it, you sell everything in order to raise enough money to buy it. You say you believe in Jesus, good, but intellectually believing in him is not enough. Even the demons intellectually believe in him. The only way to break the power of money in our lives is to relocate our treasure, which means we have to love, we have to treasure Jesus and his kingdom. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. The only way you will be able to break the power of money in your life is by loving, by treasuring Jesus and his kingdom even more. How do you relocate your treasure? How do you change your affections? You can't just snap your fingers and have it happen. You can't just try really hard or just decide that when you go to bed, you'll wake up and you'll be different. So what can you do? You need to start setting your hearts and minds on this reality. You need to ponder it every day. You need to think about this so much that, as Dallas Willard used to say, it becomes the wallpaper of your mind. Jesus, who had all the treasure of heaven, he left it all behind to come to earth. He had everything, but he became poor and homeless. He only had one garment, one possession. He gave up every treasure of heaven. Why? What did he not have? What did he hope to gain? What did he treasure more than what he already had? When you see Jesus naked and dying on a cross, then you need to remember that he did that for you and for me. Why? Because we are his treasure. He was willing to give up all the treasure of heaven so that he could come after us. And if dwelling on that reality day after day after day does not start to change your affections in the direction of Jesus, making him your treasure, then I would suggest nothing is going to change your heart. When Jesus becomes your treasure, then money can just be money. It doesn't have to be treasure. It can just be money, and you don't have to be enslaved by it. When Jesus is your treasure, then your money will just fly out of your pocketbook toward Jesus' church and its kingdom work. When that happens, we can stop having conversations about 10% because we'll give so generously it won't matter. When that happens, we won't hear the comment after every sermon that mentions money, "He's always talking about money." We'll actually be glad to hear the message because we understand it's really not a money sermon. It's a Jesus sermon. And when our money is just money, what wonderful things we can do with it. When our money is just money, we will joyfully put it to use, furthering Jesus' kingdom. A money sermon is really about loving Jesus or loving money. Perhaps we recoil because we don't want to be exposed, but that is exactly what Jesus is trying to do. Jesus knows, just like people 2,000 years ago in Palestine, you know, we need to be exposed by this message. We are his treasure, so he lovingly wants to expose the slavery of our lives and set us free, giving us the true and lasting treasure that is found only in him.